But in the 80s, I was a straight-up dyke, and it was different then. I mean, we didn't have Queer Eye. You know, we didn't have anything like that, you know, and it was dangerous to be gay, and it was very hard. It was like the 80s, and I was like, I'm gay! I'm gay! I had, like, really heavy boots and, like, cargo pants with lots of shit in the pockets, like carabiners and D-rings and measuring tape, and... Lesbians just like to hook shit on other shit. It starts with a fucking friendship bracelet, and then hooking one thing into another thing, and then it's a U-Haul.
On this episode of The Commercial Break.
Were you dominatrix for a while also?
Yeah, but I am like a better raw chef than I am. I'm like really bad dominatrix. Like I'm really like... What do they want?
Right.
Really?
I'm so indecisive, and I'm really like, I have no conviction. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like a real, like, okay. Like, I just don't have what it takes to be a good dom.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Greene. This is the Minister of Justice, Kristen Joy Hoadley. Best to you, Chrissy.
Best to you, Brian.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. My microphone just did a hiccup. I don't know what happened there. Uh-oh.
Has it been drinking?
The studio is now falling apart. We got it all together just in time for 2 weeks of perfectness, and now it's all going to start falling apart. We don't have the money to recover. So we may be doing a... I don't know. We'll probably...
We'll go back to the basics, like when we first started.
We'll go back to the basics. Maybe my microphone stand is breaking, and I'll take my flashlight, and I'll just hang it from here, and we'll stick the microphone in the vagina, if it'll fit. The great Margaret Cho is here today. What an honor to have someone named...
She's a legend.
Named one of the top 50 stand-up comics of all time by Rolling Stone. If you know,
Incredible.
You know. It's hard not to know Margaret Cho, the notorious CHO. And I'm so just starstruck a little bit, if I'm being honest, about having Margaret Cho.
We're honored to have her, for sure. And she's been in the business 40 years.
Yeah.
I mean, and she's still going strong.
I've been in the business 40 years, too. Only I just got a microphone 4 years ago. I had to save up all my allowance. I'm so happy to have her on. So Margaret Cho coming up in just a few minutes. But first, Chrissy, let me share with you a little story that I read, and I think it's about time. So, you know, all these states after Roe was overturned, now all these states are taking extreme measures to make sure that, you know, women don't have rights over their body. And you don't need to be, you just need to be a casual listener of The Commercial Break to understand that that's not the way we swing. I don't believe.
Right.
In one bit of it. I just think it's all horse shit. It's all horse cocky. But if we're going to do what's fair, fair is fair. And Kentucky, one of the states that I believe is passing these incredibly restrictive abortion laws, Kentucky has now passed a bill that makes it legal for mothers to collect child support from the moment of conception.
Ah.
Which, according to most of the people who would like to see abortion outlawed in any way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. conception is the second you jizz, essentially.
Right.
That's it, right? So now a mother has the right to go collect child support from the second that from the moment they get done making love.
All right.
Amen. Raise the stakes for everybody. Why don't we, right? Mm-hmm. Make you think twice about, like, have you been watching Love is Blind? You watched Love is Blind?
Yes.
That guy, Jeremiah, or whatever his name is, Jeremy with an A? How do you spell that? I have no idea. That guy didn't know how a dick worked. Did you see that?
Yeah.
He was like, I didn't know that all women weren't on birth control. What are you, a fucking moron?
He was like, I didn't know the ins and outs of birth control.
You don't know the ins and outs of sex?
Yeah, somebody was like, what about just a condom?
Just use a condom. Yeah.
He's like, I don't know.
Well, to be honest.
Everybody's always taking care of it.
To be honest, I never really had to worry about it.
You never had to worry about it. Yeah, that's right. You never had to worry about it, Jeremy. I got to say, like, you know, good for them. They're in love and everything seems to be going well for them.
Yes. They're expecting.
They are?
Yeah.
They really?
I think so.
Are you serious?
I think so.
Oh,
I think
my God.
That.
Well, that's how sex works, Jeremy.
They're
congratulations.
Trying.
They're trying?
Remember. Yeah.
I thought the whole thing was he didn't want to try. The whole thing was they weren't having sex because he didn't want to be inconvenienced by birth control. I mean, what a nudnik thing to say.
I know.
Fred Flintstone said smarter stuff. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Barney Rubble had more brains in his head, and his name was Barney Rubble. I mean, come on, man. Come on, dude.
I know that was dumb.
Yeah.
And but then, good for Kentucky, by the way.
Amen. Listen, I'm down with this. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, as we learned 70 episodes ago when we spent an entire episode wondering what good for the goose, good for the gander meant.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. We had so many people write in and be like, that's a nice saying, but I don't think a gander has anything to do with geese. Isn't it a gander of geese? We are.
We're
I'm not going to go through it again.
Okay. Yeah.
But I agree with this 1,000% because you got to, if someone's going to have to deal with the consequences and it takes two to tango, then let two people deal with the consequences. That's mm-hmm. how it should go.
Yeah. In it together.
Especially if we're going to, you know, outlaw some of the choices that were otherwise there. Listen, I don't want to go through a big political speech here. I just want my women friends, you and yes. my wife and everybody else, to know that it is not my place to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it never will be. Unfortunately, God did not equip me with a uterus. Actually, fortunately, God did not equip me with a uterus. So I say, hey, yay, yay, let's go.
Yeah, you should have the choice for a safe alternative if that's the choice that you make.
Oh, and yeah, no, let's not even get into the.
I know. I was just watching a documentary actually yesterday about this guy in Hollywood, Scotty, and I can't remember his last name, but it was pretty crazy. I guess he wrote a book a few years ago about all the dalliances that happened in like the 40s and the 50s, you know, when people weren't able to be gay or
you know,
or bi or anything
yeah.
else other
anything.
Than just straight.
Yeah. yeah. Right.
So he wrote this tell-all, but you know, they were talking about his daughter. His daughter died at 23 from having an abortion that was unsafe.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Welcome to the 1940s, kids.
I know. It's
and
crazy.
That's why it excites me that Margaret Cho is here today.
Yes.
And let me explain a little bit. Not only is Margaret Cho one of the best stand-up comedians of comedians, period, of all time. And I agree with that, actually. But she has also been a big flag waver for the fetish community, the kink community, the be what you be, do what you do
yep,
community.
You be you.
You be you community. And I can't think of another famous person that probably has been so out there on a lot of these issues.
Yes.
And so early, like back in the 90s, we were just talking about it. I think the first time, and I want to talk to her about this. I think the first time that I saw Margaret Cho mm-hmm. was probably her Arsenio Hall appearance.
That's right.
Back in the early 90s. That dates mm-hmm. me, but it dates her too. So both of us are fucked as far as age is concerned. We're all on the backside. We just don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
But back in the early 90s, when I'm telling you something, there weren't a lot of... there certainly weren't a lot of comedians that were talking about LGBTQ issues, mm-hmm. fetish, kink. I mean, just like so many stereotypes and so many walls broken by Margaret Cho. And it'll be exciting to talk to her about
know,
all that
I know,
stuff.
I can't wait.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll talk to her about Kentucky too, because, you know, good for Kentucky.
Yes.
Good for Kentucky. okay, you want to do this? Why don't we take a short break? Do you want to do this?
I know.
We already know what we're going to do. Do you want to do this?
Let's do it.
I've only said that 12 episodes, 12 interviews in a row. Do you want to do this? Do you want to take a break? And then after the break, we'll actually have the guest here in a move of podcast magic. We'll just port her in live while we're on the commercial break.
I would like to do that.
You would like to do
yes,
that?
Let's
okay.
do it.
Then let's do that. And we'll also change outfits just in case you're watching
right.
this on YouTube. All right. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with Margaret Cho.
Well, thank the baby Jesus. Brian took a breath, and now I will use this opportunity to let you know that we've got a brand new phone number. That's right, it's 212-433-3TCB, and you can text us anytime you want. Or you can call and leave us a voicemail, and we might just use your message on the show. Once Brian gets through all the messages he missed last year, of course. Anyway, you can also find and DM us on Instagram at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at TCB Podcast. And of course, all of our audio and video is easily found on TCBpodcast.com. Now I'm going to thank G one more time that we have sponsors. So thank G, and here they are.
Hey, Podcast Universe. I'm super excited to be talking about an old friend of mine, Jordan Harbinger, and his podcast, The Jordan Harbinger Show. You know that Chrissy and I don't do a lot of talking about other podcasts, but The Jordan Harbinger Show definitely deserves a mention, and here's why. Imagine the serious version of the commercial break, where you actually learn facts from actual experts and in-depth interviews. All the crazy, interesting, weird, and philosophical stuff that we find on the commercial break to have fun with, Jordan takes some of those same topics and he applies a degree of serious journalism to it, and he is an excellent interviewer, maybe one of the best in the business, in my opinion. We know for a fact that a lot of people who listen to the commercial break also listen to The Jordan Harbinger Show. So if you haven't yet taken a listen, go search The Jordan Harbinger Podcast on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts, or head over to his website, jordanharbinger.com. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R. Jordan has been a longtime supporter of the show, and many people have written in and thanked me for turning them on to Jordan Harbinger, including one of our staff members who is like a Jordan Harbinger super fan. And to quote her, Jordan Harbinger is like the commercial break with actual facts and a lot less laughing. We think you're going to love The Jordan Harbinger Show, so go search on Apple, wherever you find your podcasts, or get started with those starter packs at jordanharbinger.com. And we want to thank Jordan for being a supporter of the commercial break. And we're here with Margaret right now. Hi, Margaret. Thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hi.
Margaret, inquiring minds want to know, and Chrissy and I were talking about this right before you appeared magically on our screen here. What is the worst thing that you have ever tasted, drank, or tasted? Like, the worst thing?
I guess eaten or drank.
Yeah, eaten.
Yeah. Okay. So I was studying to be a raw vegan chef.
Okay.
And this was at the turn of the century. So this is 2000.
Okay.
The year 2000. The year's 2000. And I was, this is before, like, I mean, Erewhon existed, but we didn't have the Erewhon that we have now. I mean, we didn't really have the Whole Foods that we have now. It was very different. All those things existed, but it's not to the extent of raw vegan.
They were like collectives and little markets here and there.
Yeah.
But they weren't like, you know, mass produced, beautifully quality food. Right. Yeah. Gotcha.
No. So a lot of trial and error. So one time I tried to sprout soybeans and then make like a kind of like a sort of a my own tofu.
Okay.
And I did it wrong, but it looked so beautiful. Like, it looked like Duncan Hines yellow cake batter mix.
Oh, wow.
You know, that beautiful, like, golden color and that creamy consistency, and it looked so good. But I ate some, and I threw up immediately because the taste was so awful. Like, it was bitter and acrid, and, like, I ate a big bunch, and it was just, like, the worst. I mean, the worst things I've eaten are by my own hand. Sometimes I'm a terrible, I'm a chef in general.
Right.
Sometimes I'm real terrible because I do things that are not really, you shouldn't do. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Make your own tofu.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't sprout it. And then, don't do that. Like, because I just don't have the capacity. I've made myself sick multiple times.
Oh.
Wow.
You know, just because I just don't have a handle. But I also, like, know, like, what to serve people and what to not serve.
Serve people,
My experimental kitchen is it's my own doing. But yeah, the worst thing, that, and then I tried to make something with soursop, and I did it wrong.
What is soursop?
Soursop is a kind of a fruit. It's sort of an exotic fruit. I think it's kind of more of a kind of a Caribbean fruit.
Okay.
From that region of the world.
Yeah.
A little bit tropical and really not good. Not good. cherimoya, same thing. Not good. Not good. I made some puddings out of the, you know. Not, I shouldn't have done it.
My wife is from Venezuela, and she's always trying to get me to try stink fruit. Do you know what stink fruit is?
I have not.
Okay, like,
I have not.
It's this There is no smell on earth. And I've never smelled a decomposing body because I keep them under the house like most people should. Uh-huh. And so I've never smelled anything quite as terrible as Stinkford. And I'm sure that's not the actual name. I think it's like the proverbial name that they give it. It's Stinkford. But it is just, it smells so bad. How could you ever want to put it in your mouth? That's just my opinion personally.
Well, sometimes the smell is not related to the taste.
Agreed.
Like durian.
Yeah.
Durian is a very off-putting smell. It smells like dirty laundry, like feet, or like a decomposing body. That's also kind of what it's compared to. But in taste, it's quite like mango. I think it's similar to
That's a big difference.
Very ripe papaya. You know, there's a really delicious unctuousness to it, you know, it's similar to those fruits, but the smell is somewhat
off-putting
and unrelated.
I felt that way about certain kinds of Roquefort cheese, like blue cheeses and stuff like that. I felt that way for a long time in my early 20s until I actually tasted it. And then I was like, oh, this is delicious. I cannot believe I've been missing out on this all my life because it was so good. Do you remain vegan today?
No.
Okay.
No, I eat everything. But at that time, I was trying to accomplish something. I don't even know what.
Me too. I did vegetarian for like 6 days, and I was just trying to be a better human, I guess, is like the best way to explain. Like, do something good for myself and maybe the earth and the poor animals and all this other stuff. But I just didn't, I don't know. It didn't sit with me. Yeah, it didn't take. It was 6 days, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I went to a camp with Liza Minnelli and Ben Vereen in the year 2000, and I so wanted to be like this raw vegan. You know, it was like this very like amazing. It was this amazing health place where a lot of people went to, you know, when they had these life threatening illnesses and they didn't have anywhere to turn, so they would go to this one place that was like this healing camp, whatever. And you learned how to become a raw vegan chef, and you know, and they kind of showed you. And I took all these classes, but that I did not apply that knowledge in my own kitchen.
Bring on the bacon! I think it was the bacon that I couldn't stay away from. Let's be honest,
bacon's
about
good. Bacon's good and hard to replicate. I mean, I know that there's lots of different kinds of, like, you know, they do it with tempeh, they do it with all sorts of different things. You could do it with jackfruit, I believe.
Sure,
but
I've had it.
There's it's really its own thing. It's not the same. There's something about the flesh of an animal.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, little piggies, but you're just so delicious. Margaret, you're such a legendary comic. And it's to me, at least from my point of view, you seemingly have broke every stereotype and possible prejudice to just become so successful and then, I don't know, kind of clear a path for others behind you. Do you still love the joke? Do you still love the art of comedy? Are you still in love with getting up there and making people laugh after all these years?
Well, thank you. And
you're welcome.
It's a mystery, because comedy is an ever evolving mystery that you'll never quite figure out. You know, like, it's your notoriety will only really buy you about 10 or 15 seconds of grace out there. You have to always deliver and always be funny, no matter who you are. You know, the most famous, illustrious comedians bomb.
Yeah.
Because you don't have time. You don't have the time.
No.
You don't have the luxury of time. It's our job description. It's just, it has to be satisfied all the time. You cannot. That's the best thing about it and the worst thing about it. So
you have to continually work on it. Do you still bomb? Do you still have bad nights?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. Also, I do a lot at nights. So yeah.
Yeah, you're working all the time, right? I mean, you're just like, how many nights a week do you work still up on stage?
I guess I would say three to four to five. Like, it depends, because I sort of divide my time amongst other types of things too. So, and also the other kinds of live performance. So that I'm trying to work on as well. So it's more like I mean it's the majority of what I go out for. Like, to the farmer's market or to comedy club.
It's
one or the other. So it's like that kind of thing.
When you were young, I have asked this question of a few comedians that I hold in high regard, and I do you also. What is the first thing you remember being funny?
We had a really old school VCR. You know, yeah. My parents had one. It had wood on the side.
The wood paneling. Uh-huh. Oh yeah, the fake wood paneling. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. And I mimicked the grain of the television. So it was like these wood-sided, like old technology. But we had an old VCR, and my dad really loved stand-up comedy. So we would get to watch old concert comedy films that we would rent at the video store.
Oh, cool.
So we rented like Buddy Hackett in concert, which was so funny and ridiculous. And also Richard Pryor. All of Richard Pryor's comedy shows were on video. Like it was a really big deal. So and also very adult. Like a lot of things I didn't even understand was what was happening. You know, as I was really too young to even know what these jokes were about exactly.
Sure.
But the fact that he was so animated and you know, just engaging to watch, you know, he was just quite a mimic and really just so like kind of majestic, you know, in this way. He's kind of like this king. I really took to that. And then, of course, I think Eddie Murphy's Delirious when I was a little bit older. That
so
had a huge,
huge
impact, you know, because you saw that comedy now sort of branched into this rock star kind of thing, which I think Eddie Murphy was really kind of the first to do that. And then I think the person that really clinched it for me was Joan Rivers. When I saw her, I was really like, oh, this is what I will grow up to be.
Yeah. Something about those Pryor, Carlin, Chris Rock, you know, later on, they stalk the stage. They stalk the stage. They make you pay attention. Your eyes can't leave them. They're rhythmic. It's almost musical in a way. And that always got me about some of my favorite stand-up comics is that there was a musicality to it, but there was also a very commanding presence about it. Joan was like that, too. She had a very, like, she...
Absolutely.
You couldn't take your eyes off her if she was in the room. I remember watching her in my grandma's, like, guest bedroom on... Johnny Carson show because I think she would guest host there sometimes I believe and that was like my first exposure with Joan who was
and
just...
you guys got to be friends too and know each other right
yes we were very very good friends and she had a very musical quality it was like a staccato that's kind of like the way that you know you would hear her voice in your head it was like, like it was this beat you know and it is very musical but Joan was really a good friend and a mentor and certainly as later in life as I got older and she was just so important so you know I really miss her you know it's be 10 years now
it's hard to believe
It's a long time but also her presence is so enormous and as I get older I think oh this is Joan would like this. Joan would get a kick out of this, and you know she would have laughed or she would have enjoyed it.
As you get older, does your impact on comedy does that become more important? Like, is it something that you think about your own impact on?
Well, I know that like what's great is that I got to encourage a lot of Asian American comedians to think, oh, I can do this, you know. So a lot of Asian American comedians look to me as being their major influence. And that's a really great, to me, that's the best legacy. I'm really proud of that. And I'm always hitting them up for jobs. You know? Like I'm always hitting up like Bowen Yang, Ali Wong, like you better get me in season two of Beef. You know, you gotta, like I just really, because I just really want to ride their coattails all the way up. But I'm really grateful to have had a hand in their development and, you know, they're so amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. It's full circle. It's the children eat their young eventually. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I love it.
You ride my coattails and I'll ride yours a little bit later.
I love it.
You had a really interesting upbringing. Your parents owned a gay bookstore. So by gay bookstore, when you refer to this, and we've seen this a number of times in podcasts and interviews, is it just mainly gay material that they are, that your parents were selling inside of the bookstore, or was it like a community center, like a place to congregate and hang out?
Both. I mean, it also sold like mainstream literature, mainstream books, and, you know, whatever that's like, photography books, which is also kind of gay.
Yeah.
Art, any kind of literature. We would have book signings. People would do readings. You know, it was like an old school, like independent bookstore. I mean, at that time, it wasn't like considered independent because, you know, Amazon and stuff like that didn't exist. But
yeah,
be like an, like, would be like an independent bookseller like today.
Right.
And the focus was on gay literature, but also everybody else. And, you know, we had a very, like, large section for magazines. We had a lot of tattoo magazines, and that's
so
where
cool.
I met Don Ed Hardy, who was selling his own, like, Tattoo Time, these, like, specialized books that he would make and curate, showing tattooing from all over the world. So he would bring them in, and we would sell them on consignment, and he would tattoo a lot of the people at the bookstore.
Wow.
So cool.
And he ended up tattooing me later in the early 2000s. So it's like, I think it was just sort of a bookstore that was a art center, but mostly for the gay community.
And how did they get into
that? That's a great question.
Well, I don't really know exactly. I think they just liked the idea of having a bookstore. It was like this thing that my dad wanted to do. My dad was also a writer, so he just liked the sort of literary pursuit of being a this bookseller, and you know, he wanted to curate window displays and things like, you know, having like we had like one time we had sort of a big manger. So, you know, for Christmas, and you had all of the figures reading books, like, you know, like Mary's reading.
Oh, wow. I love that.
You know, like Simone de Beauvoir, like feminist stuff. Yeah. And, you know, Jesus is reading like a children's book. Just stuff like that, that sort of very like, it's barely irreverent, but also kind of alludes to like sort of literature and
it was,
you know,
like just a
humor.
Touch satirical if you knew what he was going for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cute. And I think so he wanted to have also like a community center.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, they just wanted something that was there, and that particular bookstore had come up for sale. So that's why.
Ah.
I wonder, like, I wish I had your parents.
I know. It seems like
I was growing
great
up.
Place
so
to
open-minded. I mean, we're not talking about this, like, you having, your parents having bought this bookstore in 2020. This is back in the 70s, am I right?
Yeah, this was in 1978.
So the world was a different place back then. How far we've come and how not far we've come over the last, you know, a couple of decades. But your parents are so open-minded. I imagine that had a big influence on who you became, because they were just wide open. Hey,
and you know, have access to all of that.
Yes, it's really lucky. Mm. And I think also because so in San Francisco, and it's in that era, was also very progressive in its own way. And they were electing Harvey Milk to public office. He was the first gay public official, a politician in elected office. And so there was political movements happening, and so getting to grow up around that was incredibly, an incredible education. And my first gay pride was in 1978. So that's an amazing thing to grow up next to and around, and also the heartbreaking thing of having to grow up alongside AIDS,
right?
Which was a horrifying, you can't even imagine the desperation that the community felt at that time, and to return from that is also really triumphant.
The kind of exposure, I mean, I'm you know, I grew up in the 80s, and so the AIDS epidemic was just national news for years and years and years. And I never forget my mom, I think maybe watching an Oprah episode and bawling her eyes out about how people didn't want to touch people that had HIV or AIDS. And how she told us, you know, these people, they're not pariahs, like they're not lepers. And I'm like 8 years old, so I'm like, you know, I don't even really understand what's going on. But I just remember my mom being so emotionally affected by this. But this is as far as I went. I grew up in a suburban Chicago area, so I wasn't in San Francisco, where it was kind of ground zero for this. And I bet that must have been greatly affecting as such a young person whose parents owned this bookstore that became a community center, and how devastating, and like you said, a sense of desperation that went on there. And I bet there was a lot of sadness and a lot of heartbreak that went on there over those years also, you know, people passing away and getting sick and all that other stuff.
It was so dark and traumatic. And I think, you know, and then also the people who didn't die, you know, they had a lot of survivor's guilt as well.
Yeah.
So you had a sense of this community collapse. And then our business collapsed underneath all of that as well.
Oh,
the entire
infrastructure
of that neighborhood collapsed. So in a sense, that there was a couple of gay neighborhoods in San Francisco that were really very, very big. I mean, the whole city's very gay, but it was kind of centralized into two huge neighborhoods. And then our neighborhood, the Polk District, completely collapsed. Mm-hmm. And the Castro remained. And I think that's still true to this day. It's really sort of
the Castro
that remains. But the Polk District never came back.
Oh, that's very interesting and so sad. And you don't think about that when you think about the AIDS epidemic. You don't think about the survivor's guilt, and then the businesses, the people who were going to work every day, who one day just weren't there, right? And all these other things, and the businesses that also, the people that frequented the businesses that catered to the LGBT community, and then all of a sudden they're just not there, or they're too devastated, or they move away because it's too sad. We all think about COVID as the most recent, you know, devastating health issue that happened, but I think that when we were going through that, or when the country was going through that, I do remember that being just so sad. And the way that I will remember my mom being affected by that visually striking sobbing in the family room, I knew that it was sad, right? It must have been
really
something sad.
Really sad.
Did that also, I think, like spur on your... I see you as a champion of all things fetish and kink and, you know, LGBTQ. You're so damn open-minded. I wish everybody was like you. Do you think that empathy, that being in the middle of that helped you kind of form this like deep well of love and affection and wanting to champion these causes? Because I think you've been very, you know, out there on these causes. You're not a shrinking violet when it comes to that.
No. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I think kink was a direct reaction to the way that we were learning as a community to heal and also to find ways to have sex without fluid bonding.
Very interesting.
So kink became a way to look at this idea of sex being still risky, but not actually risky. So how do we
do it without doing it.
Find a way to do it that doesn't necessarily involve exchanging fluids, yet at the same time is immersive and transgressive. So kink was almost outside idea that became, oh wow, we could actually do something that is really, really transformative and incredibly cathartic, but we don't have to put our lives at risk when we're living with HIV. So it's a really specific kind of thing that I was drawn to BDSM because it was sort of like the time period. And also those sorts of businesses around the gay community were really booming, like in that era in like the 90s, when we're talking about the worst part of the AIDS pandemic, you had the kink community emerging really triumphant because here's an alternative way where we can kind of get busy with ourselves and each other without putting anybody in harm's way.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Exciting.
I never even thought about it like that. And you became were you a dominatrix for a while also?
Yeah, but I am like a better raw chef than I am. I'm like really bad dominatrix. Like I'm really like, what do they want?
Really?
I'm so indecisive and I'm really like, I have no conviction. Yeah. That's the worst.
Neither. Yeah.
Like I'm like a real like, okay. Like I just don't have what it takes to be a good dominatrix. I do like every so often, like I'll go back and so before the pandemic, I was doing this thing with my friends where we were going to be rope doms.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So we're going to do suspension bondage and like, you know, with like all the sure. Japanese
ties and the knots.
Shibari and stuff. Yeah. So I started doing that and then we had to stop doing them in person because of the lockdown. And it never quite came back. And there's something about it when you do it online, it's really hard to figure out because everything's reversed.
Right.
Yeah, it's a mirror image, yeah.
I'm like, what am I? You have to get behind me. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, so it's like I'm much better off if I do it in person, but those classes haven't come back yet. When they do, I'm definitely into it, but it's really hard to do it online.
A Zoom Shibari class.
You know,
yeah.
Listen, I am, you know, a straight white guy from Chicago, right? But I have met a few women who have been into some BDSM type stuff. And I'm like you. I just don't have a conviction. I'm like, I don't want to hurt you. Really? I mean, is that really what you want? I don't know. It's just, but that's, you know, that's not for me. That particular thing is not for me. But there, I also feel like sometimes kink is a little performative also. And mm-hmm. that part of it, I can get into sometimes, like, you know, there's mm-hmm. kinks that I feel are performative and that's can be fun mm-hmm. in the bedroom. Because I feel you're much more of an expert at this than the commercial break, but what is like the kinkiest kink you've heard of, been a part of, seen, like the most out there?
Oh, the weirdest like,
shit.
What it is like latex beds where they're like compressed and then so you know when you vacuum seal food
yes. yeah mm-hmm.
they'll like vacuum seal themselves into like a latex bed.
Oh wow.
So I've that's like to me beds, I'm like but... I'm like what okay like when you vac oh okay
yeah.
okay so I get I don't know what
turns okay. them on yeah.
But that any kind of like a vacuum thing or like there was but one guy that really like that took the cake was this guy who really nice guy and he would take he rigged a veterinary like a medicine like a medical machine that okay. usually is used in veterinary medicine. And it's like a suction thing to pull out body fluids. So he rigged it to use it on his penis. And he would hook it onto his penis for up to like 48 hours so that his penis would swell to the size of a basketball.
Oh,
so it looked like he was holding a basketball in his lap. But it was actually
his penis.
And he would just sit around like that. For hours and after taking out the sort of the suction thing and you know he described it as being he would high off the sensation and you know in
probably
a
because
and
the I, blood left his head
yeah, yeah. I couldn't figure out like he wasn't really either a top or a bottom it had no sort of power dynamic involved
okay.
Like, it wasn't like somebody was forcing him to do that. It wasn't like he would, you know, he wasn't using it because it was just like a marshmallow. So it couldn't be inserted into anything.
So it wasn't necessarily about like, you know, I'm sure that it's a kink. So I'm sure there was some kind of pleasure involved for him, whether that was maybe the blood leaving his head and like
enlarging it.
Yeah, maybe.
It's the body modification that he was excited by. And so... It didn't necessarily fit because he would show up to like these like quote unquote like play parties at all these dungeons. Sometimes dungeons will hold like these parties where they sort of have lots of different types of people come and use the mm-hmm. facility to play. And then it's almost very performative. So he would have his own room where he would do that.
Wow.
And he would pay for like the most expensive. He was very, very wealthy. So he'd pay for like the most expensive he had like yachts and stuff. Like he was like, this like really rich guy, but also like you couldn't
I couldn't.
Whoa.
I couldn't.
You couldn't figure it out. Yeah. I can't figure it out either. Like, but I mean, that's the wonderful thing I think about kink when you think about it is that if, you know, if you want to do it, you can do it. Like, as long as you're not without consent hurting somebody else, then do it. Whatever. It's all good. You want to dress up like a furry? Cool. You want to blow your penis up to the size of a basketball? Cool. Or suck it up to the size of a basketball? Yeah. I've seen that done on vaginas. Like, I've seen that in certain videos. I've seen people, like, suck those, you know, put those suctions on their vaginas. And I'm sure that also probably brings some kink. Were you a phone sex worker one time, too?
Yeah. When I was really young.
How young?
I was like 15.
Holy shit.
I was doing it like 15, but I didn't talk to anybody. Like, I was doing like recorded messages.
Gotcha.
So I tried sort of like, tried to talk to people, but then it wasn't working. So they would like have us. So I had my friend and I would write these kind of like messages, and then we would read them. And it was this thing called Hot Girls USA, where we were doing phone sex for people who were just learning English.
Oh.
So it was a very simple sentence structure. And the girls, my name is Mary. I have large breasts. And you would just go through these very simple sentences so people learning English could get an understanding of, you know, I guess they were like, learning English.
Yeah, it's like Duolingo for horny people.
Yes. So this is all sort of before apps and before Rosetta Stone or any of those things. So you had another way. But that was we made a lot of money doing that.
Yeah.
So it was really great.
Those services made a lot of money.
Yeah, my dad can tell you.
They did.
He paid quite a few of those bills. It was a
976.
Yeah, 976 1-900 numbers. We've done episodes on this before, but you know, there were these companies that were making millions and millions of dollars a week, you know, bringing in people that wanted to talk sex on the phone. And I can imagine
the sex and the psychics.
The sex and the psychics, those two.
Like Miss Cleo. Miss Cleo.
Miss Cleo. There's a version of Miss Cleo that's back, I think. There's like, you know, California Psychics or something like
that.
Yeah, I just don't think they can make the promises that Miss Cleo did because I hear she got in trouble.
So interesting.
I know.
You, over your career, have worked with so many people. You've done so many things, television, film, comedy. Can you pinpoint your favorite comedian that you've worked with? Like, that you've worked with. Not a favorite comedian that you've seen, but a favorite comedian or two that you have worked with.
Well, I really love working with Wanda Sykes because we just
she's so great.
We have a good time. You know, we do karaoke, and she loves to sing some Jeffrey Osborne.
Oh, really?
And she's just very good. She's a really good, she's such a good person to hang out with and just, like, laugh. I also laugh a ton with Amy Schumer. We really get along. Really get along.
You're in Life and Beth, right?
Yeah. So we just have a good time, you know, and she and I have the same sense of humor. So we really laugh, and you know, I really appreciate her in so many ways.
Yeah.
So
one of our producers would like you to know, her name is Christina. One of our producers, she's such a huge fan of yours. And she would like you to know that her dream OBGYN is you. Just so
oh, thank you. Thank you. I agree. I think I would be good at that. I think that's one thing that I would be able to do very easily.
I love that show. I haven't gotten to your specific episode yet because I just started binging it. But yeah, it's a great show. I love the first season too. So love it.
And I do have to tell you, even though I think it's a total of 5 full minutes in the entire series, I think your turn on 30 Rock was so fucking hilarious. I just
thank you.
It was so good. Did you enjoy working on that show?
Oh, I loved it. You know, I loved Tina too. Yeah. Tina is just really an incredible person. And, you know, she's I've done quite a few things with her, you know, things that haven't made it on the air, you know, unfortunately, like I've done like pilots with her, and she always puts me in things. She's always thinking of me, and I'm just so grateful to her for that. But I also just enjoy her comedy, her perspective, and she's just
She's awesome.
She seems like one of those human beings that was just born a fucking badass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She, in my opinion, she seems like she can do no wrong comedically when she acts, when she's, you know, I'm assuming when she's writing, yeah. when she hosts those shows. She's just so good every time.
She seems like
she's a great person. Yeah,
too.
She seems like a good human yeah. being too. So you're on tour right now, as I'm sure that is the constant in your life. You're always on tour. Well, I mean, not during the pandemic, but I'm sure it's been the constant in your life. And is this all new material that you're doing now, or are you?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh. Yes. I think it's, you know, also like comedians in general, like what my theory is that we're all just telling the same joke, but we're telling it in a million different ways. Like, you know, you have
it's like music. Yeah.
Yeah. You have like sort of your style and your way of being, and then you present that in a million different ways.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Do you ever revisit bits, segments, yeah. jokes? Do you ever say, yeah. like, you know, we just, Chrissy and I were just watching the Arsenio Hall, where I think I first saw you back in 1993. Mm-hmm. And there's some funny stuff in there, and you're referring to being a child of the 80s, you know, all this other stuff. Do you ever like go back, look and go, hey, I think I could retool that, massage it a little bit and bring it forward.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the greatest
all the
hits.
Time. All the time. All the time. You know who does that, is so great at doing that, is Brian Regan.
Oh, I love
at
Brian the end Regan.
Of, isn't he the best?
He is. I He's interviewed so him on Clubhouse amazing. And I just loved him. Oh, I thought he was great. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love him. I love him.
He's so
I
underrated. But I love Brian.
He
I mean, he's
is
very
a genius.
Famous. Yes, but I just don't think he gets the credit
best.
He deserves.
No, he doesn't. And he really is so special. But at the end of his shows now, for the encore, he asked for requests. So audience members get to yell out their favorite, and they'll do them. And it's always different. You just never know. It's so great.
That is that is such a good idea. Yeah. You should start that in your show. I mean,
you have to go back and brush up on it. I mean, everything. And I've thought about doing that, but I think, you know, it's just like, you can kind of go back and revisit things, and people really appreciate it. Also, if you have a new take on it, because we're always different.
Yeah, changing.
You know, so.
Are you a student of comedy? Do you feel like you're a student of comedy? And do you write everything down? And or is it just, you make bullet points and then go from there? What's your process when it comes to writing?
I mean, the thing is that like with certain things in stand-up comedy, I will have a photographic memory. Like if something works, then I know it works like that.
Yeah.
That's what it does. And then I just file it away. I do write a lot down, but I don't write it word for word how it is, because I kind of will remember it.
Sure.
Also, it's like all kind of captured in all different ways.
Yeah.
So I just have a sense of like, oh, this worked this way. And for some reason, memory really works in my favor when it comes to stand-up comedy. Not necessarily anything else.
Me neither. You know,
comedy is good.
I was telling Chrissy this. I don't know. We do so many episodes of the show. Who knows? But I was telling her this a couple months ago. I said, you know, I'm a guy of a certain age. I have very young children. They occupy a ton of space in my head, as does all the normal stress. And so I don't, my memory does not work in my favor 70% of the time. But when I get in this studio, if I hear a clip from one of our episodes, I know exactly what I was thinking during that moment and what I thought I should say. Like, it just takes me back to that moment instantaneously. Like, the only thing that my memory is good for is remembering the one thing it should not be good for. Like, it is kind of crazy, and I kind of understand. Do you ever go up on stage, you have your set, you know where you're generally going to go with it, and then the crowd demeanor, the energy, it makes you kind of shape shift a joke in a certain way, like, oh, this crowd is a little extra hype, so let me put an extra pregnant pause here, or let me tell this joke in a different way, or I'm such a fan of how this all works, so I'm curious.
Yeah, because it's like stand-up comedy is so alive. You have to be alive with it, so you have to adapt to whatever's happening in the moment and what you're doing, and also the way that things started. Also, if you're performing on a show where there's like significant people before you, you have to sort of bring them into it as well.
Gotcha.
Or the energy of what's happening as well. So you have to be alive with the jokes as well. You're not sort of able to tell them on the same way every time. You need to sort of tell them the same way, but you also have to be alive to what is the different thing that's going on.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
Are you taking anybody on tour with you this time?
Yes. On tour with me right now is a wonderful comedian named Daniel Webb. He is so hilarious, and we've been working together now for 4 years,
okay.
And I'm really enamored with him. I think he's really, really special. And I'm really lucky because everybody that's opened for me now plays stadiums. Like the people who open for me is like, I mean, it's pretty incredible. Like Jim Gaffigan, Atsuko Okotska.
Oh yeah.
All of these people who are like Mark Birbiglia. Russell Peters, everybody who's like opens me like is now is like Sir Jonathan Van Ness. They like all go into this very stratosphere. It's really like this incredible thing. So I'm a good
judge of character. That's
always
right.
I'm really good at it.
It's also not like you're playing like, you know, I mean, you do go, and I'm sure like a lot of comics, you go to the Comedy Store and you know, but that's a great, you know, that's a legendary room to play in itself. But you're also not playing these, you know, some cafe somewhere either. You're doing it right for yourself.
No, but it's really amazing. Like all the people that I've like had open for me have really gone on to this incredible success. So Daniel is really great.
And so have you. Named one of Rolling Stone's top 50 comics of all time. What an amazing. And I have to agree with them. Margaret Cho, you are a legend. I don't know how or why you got on this show, but we are better for it. We love you. You are the best. I hope that someday you will come back and say hello to us again, because there are 7 million things I want to talk to you about.
I know. I have a whole list.
We only got to 6. Ask one more question. We have a couple more minutes.
Well, how's Lucia, for one? I love your dog.
She's been sitting right here.
She's so adorable.
Right? Oh, my thigh.
The most adorable.
Look at that look in her
eyes.
So
good.
Yeah.
She's so good.
Do you
She's
take
a little
her on
tired.
Tour?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes, she goes everywhere. And today we were in the studio all day today, so she's really tired because there was another dog there.
Oh.
She was running around there.
Excitement.
With a little brindle dog.
Look at her.
She's extremely tired, and so she was sitting right here this whole time.
Oh, you've been so good, Lucia.
I know. Look
she's
at
so
that face.
Good.
I need to get me one of those. That dog makes no. That dog didn't. That dog didn't bark once.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a dog, and she has appeared on every episode of the commercial break by way of barking the entire time.
Oh.
She's a Yorkie though, so
Oh, cute.
God bless her soul. She was born like that. Tickets available now for Margaret's tour, Life and Beth. We're going to put all of the information available in the show notes. Margaret Cho, the notorious CHO, thank you so much for spending time.
We are just
very grateful for it.
Thank you.
Well, thank the baby Jesus. Brian took a breath, and now I will use this opportunity to let you know that we've got a brand new phone number. That's right, it's 212-433-3TCB, and you can text us anytime you want. Or you can call and leave us a voicemail, and we might just use your message on the show. Once Brian gets through all the messages he missed last year, of course. Anyway, you can also find and DM us on Instagram at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at TCB Podcast. And of course, all of our audio and video is easily found on tcbpodcast.com. Now I'm going to thank G one more time that we have sponsors. So thank G, and here they are.
Oh my gosh. Margaret fucking Cho, kids.
I mean, I just love her so much. What a refreshing, you know, take on the world that she has. And I mean, so unique with her upbringing and what all she's done throughout her whole life. It's amazing. And I love her.
Kids got a story to tell. That's for sure. Kids got a story to tell. I did not have a penis balloon on my bingo card for 2024, but I did ask the question. So I got the answer.
Exactly. That was, as you know, as she was talking about it, I was picturing it.
Yeah.
You know, you can't help it.
No, and you can't. She says what was it? She said it was the size of a bowling ball.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
large.
Incredible. And she said he was like a billionaire. Didn't she? Like he's a billionaire.
Yes, he was very wealthy.
Yeah. I guess when you have that much money and you can literally have anything you want, you have to go to extremes.
You find new ways to entertain
yourself.
You
just have to do it. Yeah. Me, I stay awake by just stressing about money. The billionaire, he stays awake wondering how to spend it all. Well, I guess I could blow my penis up like a bowling ball. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's got to do something to your junk, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got
to do something not healthy to your junk. Yeah, but you're a billionaire. You just get a new one.
Yeah.
A penis transplant. Oh, Lord. Margaret Cho, the great Margaret Cho, is on tour now. So go to margaretcho.com/tour if you want tour tickets. You can go there. You can see everything about her. She's got a big old, nice, very nice website. So do that and go see her because she is incredible. Chrissy and I took some time. We watched a lot of the stand-up videos that she's had from the first television appearance that she had to the most recent YouTube videos that she's put out. The lady is still fucking funny. She's still got it. Like she said, she's still like the art of the joke is still in her head.
Loves the danger. It's so interesting too. I've noticed because we've talked to quite a few, more mature comedians.
That's a nice way to put it.
And some younger ones and their different takes on how their processes and what they do is interesting.
It's very interesting. And I think one of the things that I think I didn't expect, but I liked was she shared with us that, you know, you have 15 seconds, right? You got a minute. You got a minute with the crowd. And you think someone like Margaret Cho, after so many years of so much success and selling out venues time after time again, being up in comedy clubs 4 or 5 nights a week, that you just would, I guess not kill every time, but you wouldn't expect to have a bad night, bad day at the office.
Yeah.
But she still says, you know, I only got a few minutes with my audience. And if they're not there with me, they're not there with me. And she still says she bombs. And that makes me feel good because that lets me know that every 4 episodes that we do, 3.5 of them are bombs. And I'm still, I also know that I have 15 seconds.
Standing.
Yeah. Ah, good old Elton.
Well, another thing that she was mentioning, and it makes me want to go check out this other guy too, that she's on tour with, Daniel Webb.
Yeah.
Because she was mentioning, and it's so true, everybody that she brings out, whether blows
sells
up.
Sells out stadiums.
Yeah, ends up going crazy. And that's a testament to her eye.
And then she says, hey, when am I going to sell out stadiums? I mean, yeah, I guess that's the way you feel. No matter where you're at, you always want more success. That's how successful people get successful. That's why we're not, is because they're hungry for more. We're happy with less, right? But
we like being mediocre.
Yeah, we like being mediocre. I don't want to be at the top of the pack or the bottom of the pack. I just want to be right in the middle. I'm okay with it.
Yes.
But one of the things that I guess it just is indicative of someone that is hungry for success, that they want to play bigger stadiums. They want to make funnier jokes. They want to whatever. They want to be the best at their art that they can possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
But what a fucking life. I mean, what a fucking life. And she's so right. Awkwafina, all these people, all the comics who have come from Asia or are of Asian descent. Mm-hmm. She kind of broke the barriers for them. That must be an interesting feeling to go to sleep at night and know that you were the first and everybody came by, like rushing in behind you, but you were the first at something. I'd like to be the first at anything. I'm not the first at anything. That, I don't know, for me, that feels like such an accomplishment.
Absolutely.
And had I done the same thing, I probably would have just slept the rest of my life. You know what I'm saying? Break down the barriers and then take a nap until you die. I mean, seriously, think about it in your own personal life. When have you been the first, the best, the fastest, had the most audience when have you ever been? So few people can say that about anything, unless we're talking about like stupid Guinness Book of World Records shit, like, you know, I don't know, most keys on a keyboard or something. I made a keyboard, 3,000 keys. Who cares? Who gives a fuck? I'm talking about like really important stuff, like breaking down stereotypes and prejudices. And
using her voice and her platform to then not only break down as a comedian barriers, but then to also be talking about all of the other things too, to do with, you know, gay, bisexual, whatever. Yeah. Again, you be you, whatever you're into.
You do you. Yep. You do you. She said it. She didn't say this in this interview, but she said it in other interviews that her mom doesn't believe in bisexual. Mm-hmm, so she just calls, she says, just be gay.
Yeah, just pick one.
just pick one. And then the other thing she says is bisexual is not necessarily like a PC term right now, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I don't keep up. You know, I can't keep up with everything. But I saw her in another interview say that it's not necessarily PC to say bisexual, but I like it. it because it's kind of 70s.
Right, that's right. Yeah, she was saying pansexual is more the term.
Pansexual.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, listen, I'm into it if you're into it. That's all I got to say. So the great Margaret Cho, margaretcho.com. Go get your tickets for her tour right now, please and thank you. I sure as shit hope that she comes back because... I mean, I say this after every single guest, but I think I've meant it on most of them. I wish we had had more time.
Yeah.
And we probably do, but I don't want to like burn them out on the commercial break. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I want to give us a small opportunity, a small window of opportunity to invite some of these people back with the hopes that they may actually say yes. Mm-hmm. And if I spend 2 hours with them now, they're going to be like, that's way too much commercial break in my lifetime.
Right.
Like, yeah. That's. I spent 120 minutes with them. That's 119 more than I needed to spend with them. But we are very grateful for Margaret coming on the show. And good luck with the tour. She's not coming to Atlanta. I wish she was because I'd go see her with you.
I know. She might be adding stuff.
I'd go get my penis pump and
be there in the front row.
Right there with my big bowling ball cock. I mean, I did it, Margaret. I did it.
I tried that.
I tried it. It worked. I can't feel my lower body, but it's awesome. I'm high as a kite. Okie dokie. You know what to do. Go to tcbpodcast.com. More information about the show, Chrissy and I. You can read all the show notes, get all the links to all of our guests' information if you want tickets, if you want to check them out. All that stuff is available on the show notes of that particular episode. And you can get your free Piggy Frontin' sticker by hitting the Contact Us button. Give us your physical
Piggy
address.
Frontin'.
Piggy Frontin'. Frontin'. Well, I thought I'd throw a little twang in there. Since last time we saw Teresa, she was at that, whatever it was, the hot dog shack or something.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know. It's a terrible show, by the way.
It is just terrible. Yeah.
All right. But onward and upward. So go get your Piggy Frontin' sticker. Give us your address. We'll send it off. 212-433-3TCB. 212-433-3TCB. Questions, comments, concerns, content ideas. Ask TCB. Ask Brian's mom. But more importantly, we want you to join us on the show. All you have to do is text us. Let us know you have a story. You want advice. You want to ask us something, whatever it is. We're opening up the phone lines, but since you don't know when we record, you got to text us so we can set it up. 212-433-3TCB. Do it now. We're going to start doing that soon. Add the commercial break on Instagram, TCB Podcast on TikTok, and youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. All right, Chrissy, I guess that's all I can do for today.
I think so.
I love you.
I love you.
Best to you.
And best to you.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, Chrissy and I will say, we do say, and we must say,
goodbye.
Get out.